Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, and we've reached Canto 2, the Parable of the Search for the Soul. And last week, we looked at the first section, which ends on page 477 at the break. Four, seven, seven. In that section, Savitri heard a voice from above, which told her that she has to arise and vanquish time and death. And at first, the heart protests. How is this possible? And why is it necessary? But then a power within her answered that voice, and it tells, she replied, "Command, for I am here to do thy will." And then there's this wonderful passage where the voice tells her to remember why thou camest. Find out thy soul. Recover thy hid self. In silence, seek God's meaning in thy depths. Then mortal nature change to the divine. So in the last sentences of that section, we are shown Savitri still rigid in her golden motionless pose in the black night. She looked into herself and sought for her soul. So the next few cantos 3 and 4 and the first part of canto 5 will show us Savitri on the journey of discovery to her soul. But the first experience that comes is told in the next two sections up to the end of this canto. And this is one of the little lesser known parts of the poem. It's one why this first section, I think most Savitri readers and lovers, they know it and they recognize its importance. But the rest of this canto here, what is it about? A dream disclosed to her the cosmic past. It is as if she is given in vision, in dream, the view of the whole unfolding of the universe through time, up to the human level, up to this moment where she has reached now. So I think we will read all this first before we look at it in more detail. Susmita, would you begin, please?
Okay. Then Savitri.
No, after the break, a dream. Yes.
A dream disclosed to her the cosmic past, the crypt seed and the mystic origins, the shadowy beginnings of world faith. Lamp of symbolizing hidden truth, imagining to her the world's significance. In the infinite formlessness of self, creation took the first mysterious step. It made the body's shape the house of soul and matter learn to think and personally. She saw space peopled with the seeds of life, and saw the human creature born in time. At first appeared the dim, hard, neutral tide of beginning and of being emerging out of infinite note. A consciousness looked at the inconscient past, and pleasure and pain stirred in the insensible void. All was the deed of a blind world energy, unconscious of her own exploits as she was, shaping a universe out of the inane. In fragmentary beams, she grew aware of the chaos of little sensibilities, gathered round a small ego's pinpoint head. In it, a sentient creature found its voice. It moved and lived, a breathing, thinking world, on a dim ocean of subconscious light. A formless surface of consciousness awoke. A stream of thoughts and feelings came and went. A form of memories hardened and became a bright crust of a ritual sense and thought. A seat of living personality and recurrent habits mimicked permanence. Mind nation leveled out and table form. It built and mobile house on shifted sands, a floating isle upon a bottomless sea. A conscious being was by its labor made. It looked around it on its difficult field. In the green, wonderful, and perilous earth, it hoped in a brief body to survive. Relying on matter's false eternity, it felt a godhead in its fragile house. It saw blue heaven's green immortality.
Thank you. Do you like to read?
Yes.
Yes.
A conscious soul in the inconscient world, hidden behind our thoughts and hopes and dreams. An indifferent master seeing nature's acts, leaves the vicegerent mind a singing king. In his floating house upon the sea of time, the regent sits at work and never rests. He is a puppet of the dance of time. He is driven by the hours and the moment's call, compulsing with the throning of life's beauty and the babble of the voices of the world. His mind no silence knows nor dreamless sleep. In the incessant circling of each steps, thoughts tread forever through this listening brain. It toys like a machine and cannot stop. Into the body's many story-eyed room, endless crowd down the dream God's messages. All is a hundred-toned murmur and bubble and steel. There is a tireless running to and fro, a haste of movement and a ceaseless cry. The hurried servant senses answer apace to every knock upon the outer door. Many times visitors report each call. Amid the thousand queries, the carries and the calls, and the messages of communicating minds, and the heavy business of unnumbered lives, and all the thousandfold commerce of the world.
Thank you. Mihun.
Even in the tracks of sleep is a skeleton pose. It mocks life's steps in strange subconscious dreams. It strays in a subtle realm of simple things. It's night with the thin air visions and dim forms. It packs all peoples with the slight drifting shapes and only a moment spent in silent sight. Adventuring into infinite mind space, he unfolds his wings of thought in inner air, or traveling in imagination's park, crosses the globe, journeys beneath the stars, to subtle worlds takes his ethereal course, visits the gods of life's miraculous peaks, communicates with heaven, tempers with hell. This is the little surface of man's life. He is in this, and he is all the universe. He scales the unseen, his steps bear the abyss. A whole mysterious world is locked within. Unknown to himself, he leads a hidden king behind a rich tapestries in great secret rooms and
an epicure
of the spirit's unseen joys. He lives on the sweet honey of solitude, a nameless god in an unapproachable fame, in the secret addictum of his inner soul, inmost soul. He guards the beings covered mysteries beneath the threshold, behind shadowy gates, all shut in vast cellars of impassioned sleep.
Thank you. Jerry?
In my belief, divine, all wonderful, how secret our argent purity of the soul. His splendor and his greatness, and the line itself creation becomes infusion. As into sublimely mirroring depths, man in the world's life works out the beings of God. The all is here, even God's opposites. He is a little crown that made his work. A thinking outline of a cryptic force. All she reveals in him that is in her, her glories walk in him and her darknesses. Men's house of life holds not the God alone. There are awful shadows, there are venomous powers. Inhabitants of life's luminous never moves. The shadowy worlds of canvas pins us. The careless guardian of his nature's fire, man harbors dangerous forces in his house. The titan and the fury and the djinn lie bound in the subconscious covering pit, and the beast grovels in his iron den. I am mutter mean lines and murmur in their drawers. Insurgent sometimes raises his huge head and monstrous mystery lurking in my sleeves. The mystery of dark and fallen worlds, the dread visages of the adversary kings, the dreadful powers held down within his depths, become his masters, or his ministers. The enormous invade his bodily house, can act in his acts, in first his thought and life, inferno surges into the human heaven and touches all with the perverting breath.
Thank you. We'll go to the second line. Mom, will you read? Okay. Andras, will you?
Great forces, like a green magma creep, steal through chinks of his closed mansion's doors, discoloring the walls of upper mind in which he lives his fair and spacious life, and leave behind a stench of sin and death. Not only rising him for various gifts of thought and formidable formless influences, but there comes presences and awful shapes. Tremendous forms and faces mount dim steps and stare at times into his living rooms, or call up for a moment's passionate word. Their dire customs claim upon his heart. Aroused from sleep, they can be bound no more, afflicting the daylight and alarming night, invading at will his outer tenement. The stark dreams, grisly, dire inhabitants, mounting to God's light, all light perturbed. All they have touched or seen, they make their own, in nature's dazing watch, mind's passages filled. Disrupt thoughts' lengths and musing sequences, break through the soul's stillness with a noise and cry, or they call the inhabitants of the abyss, invite the instincts to forbidden joys, a laughter wake of dread demoniac mirth, and with never either riot and rebel shape life's floor. Impotent to quell his terrible prisoners, Appel, a householder helpless, sits above, taking from him his house, peace, his moment. He is bound and forced, a victim of the plague, or a lure, joys in the mad and mighty day. His nature's dangerous forces, the rising hold of will, the rebels hunger, aroused from the darkness where they crouch in the depths. Prisoned from the sight, they can be held no more. His nature's impulses are now his works.
Thank you. Bom.
Once had for 11 pages named and read, in honor, animal power of the earth, when the lower nature bows to give or forget their vast counterpart, leads sometimes man's role, and awkward disturbance overpowers man's soul, in house and house for things of life and world, as a companion, or used to the devil. Into the front legs they break out from foreign world, invade with the broad lust and the will to serve, and deal with power and conscience. Of the fair world. Death is a conqueror's form of the victim of a terrible anger to everything. And all the left is not at the world's pay and
massacre.
Massacre and torture being the heaven, all is the pride of the destroying force. The ancient rocks and cambrics of cut and bay is every nature housed in human house, a falling inhabitant, a dangerous guest. For sure the cowboys, if it kept its force, except the householder, possess the heart, and offer the potence, control the keeper. For momentary ability, all mighty, has threatened the place part of nature's acts. If in cases, the Godhead is denied, put on to the people and assumed to be the place. Of managing creator and destroyer, as it can abolish man,
Thank you. Ganga Lakshmi.
So, all the world's possibilities in man are waiting as a tree waits in its seed. His past lives in him, drive his future pace. His present acts fashion his coming fate. The unborn gods hide in his house of life. The demon of the unknown overshadow his mind, casting their dreams into live molds of thought, the molds in which his mind builds out its world. His mind creates around him its universe. All that has been renewed in him its birth. All that can be his figure in his soul. And swim indeed in the score of the road of the world, obscure to interpreting reason's guess, lines of the secret purpose of the gods. In strange directions run the intricate plan, held back from the human foresight is there, and the far intention of some ordering will, of the order of life's arbitrary chance, finds out its settled poise and fate all.
Thank you.
Our surface was vain, varisen's gaze, invaded by the impotence of the unseen, helpless records of accidents of time, the involuntary wrongs and leaves of life. Only a little of us foresees its steps, only a little has will and purpose, space. A vast subliminal is man's measureless part, the deep subconscious is his carbon base. Abolished vainly in the works of time, our past lives still in our unconscious self, and by the weight of its hidden influences, it shaped our future self-discovery. Thus, all is an inevitable change, and yet all series scenes of accidents. The unremembering hours repeat the old acts, our dead past round our future's ankle spring, and drags back the new nature's glorious tread, or from its buried corpse old ghosts arise. Old thoughts, old longings, dead passions live again, recur in sleep or move the waking man to worlds that fold the barrier of the leaves, to deeds that suddenly start and whirly, his tale of reason and his guiding will.
Thank you.
An old self lurks in the new self we are, hardly we escape from what we once had been. In the dim gleam of habit's passages, in the subconscious darkling corridors, all things are carried by the porter nerves, and nothing checked by subternum mind. unstudied by the guardians of the doors and passed by a blind instinctive memory. The old gang dismissed, old cancelled passports served. Nothing is holy death that once had lived. In dim tunnels of the world's being and in ours, the old rejected nature still survives. The corpses of its slain thoughts raise their heads and visit mind's nocturnal walks in sleep. Its stifled
stifled.
Its stifled impulses
breathe
and move and rise. All keeps a phantom immortality. Irresistible are nature's sequences. The seeds of sins renounced sprout from hid soil. The evil cast from our hearts once more we face. Our dead selves come to slay our living soul. A portion of us lives in present time. A secret mass in dim inconscience crops. Out of the inconscient and subliminal horizon, we live in mind's uncertain light and strive to know and master a dubious world whose purpose and meaning are hidden from our sight. Above us dwells a superconscient God, hidden in the mystery of his own light. Around us is a vast of ignorance lit by the uncertain ray of human mind. Below us sleeps the inconscient, dark and mute.
Thank you.
But this is only matter's first self-view. A scale and series in the ignorance. This is not all we are, or all our world. Our greater self of knowledge awaits for us. A supreme light in the truth conscious vast. It sees from summits beyond thinking mind. It moves in a splendid air, transcending life. It shall descend and make earth's life divine. Truth made the world, not a blind nature force. For here are not our large diviner heights. Our summits in the superconscious blaze are glorious with the very face of God. There is our aspect. There is our aspect of eternity. There is the figure of the God we are. His young, unaging look on deathless things, his joy in our escape from death and time, his immortality and life in this. Our larger being sits behind cryptic walls. There are greatnesses hidden in our unseen parts that await their hour to step into life's front. We feel an aid from deep indwelling gods. One speaks within. Light comes to us from above. Our soul, from its mysterious chamber, acts. Its influence pressing on our heart and mind pushes them to exceed their mortal selves. It seeks for good and beauty and for God. We see beyond self's walls. We see beyond self's walls, our limitless self. We gaze through our world's glass, half-seen vasts. We hunt for the truth behind apparent things.
Thank you.
Our inner mind dwells in the enlarged light. Its brightness looks at us through hidden doors. Our members luminous glow and wisdom's face appears in the doorway of the mystic world. When she enters into our house of our outward sense, then we look up and see above a sun, a mighty light self with its inner powers, supports the roughish modicum we call life. It can craft upon our crown two poisonous wings, our body's subtle self is thrown within. In its viewless palace of veridical dreams that are bright shadow of the thoughts of God, in the prone obscure beginnings of the race, the human blue in the bow of black man is too direct a godlike form and force, and a soul starts looked out from earth-born eyes, man stood erect, he wore a thinker's brow. He looked at heaven and saw his comrade stars, a vision came of beauty and greater breath. Slowly emerging from the heart's chapel of light and moved in the white, lucent air of dreams, he saw his being's unrealized vastnesses. He aspired and housed the nascent demigod.
Thank you. Thank you. Prasad.
Out of the dim recess of the self, the utter seeker into the open door, he heard the far and touched the intangible. He gazed into the future and the unseen. He used the power the instrument cannot use, the pastime made of the impossible. He caught up the fragments of the omniscient thoughts. He scattered formulas of omnipotence. Thus, man in his little house made of earth dust grew towards an unseen heaven of thought and dream. Looking into the vast vistas of his mind on a small globe dotting infinity. At last, climbing a long and narrow stair, he stood alone on the high roof of things and saw the light of the spiritual sun. Aspiring, he transcends his earthly self. He stands in the largeness of his soul newborn, redeemed from the encirclement by mortal things and moved in a pure, free spiritual realm. As in the rare breath of
stratosphere.
Stratosphere. The last end of far line of divinity. He mounts by a frail thread of his high soul. He reaches his fount of immortality. He calls the Godhead into his mortal life.
Thank you. Ellen.
All this the Spirit conceived had done in her, a portion of the mighty Mother King into her as into its own human heart. Amid the cosmic working of the gods, it marked her the center of a wide world scheme, dreamed in the fashion of her far-seeing spirit. To mold humanity into both God's own shape and lead this great life struggling world to light, or a new world discovered here. Earth must transform herself and equal heaven, or heaven descend into earth's mortal state. But for such a spiritual change to be out of the mystic cavern in man's heart, the heavenly psyche must put off her weight and step into common nature crowded rooms and stand uncovered in the nature's front and tune its thoughts and feel the body and love. Obedient to high command, she said,
time, life, and death were passing, incidents, obscuring with the transient view of sight. Her sight that must break through and liberate the God, imprisoned in the visionless mortal mind, the inferior nature born into ignorance, still took too large a place, it weighed herself, and must be pushed aside to find her soul.
Mm, thank you. So we go back to page 477 at the break. You will read, please. Yes.
The dream disclosed to her the cosmic past. The creep cedar, the mystic origins, the shadowy beginnings of world fate. A lamp of symbol lightning hidden imagined to her the world's significance. In the indeterminate formlessness of self, creation took its first mysterious steps. It made the body shape a house of soul, and matter learned to think, and person grew. She saw space peopled with the seeds of life, and saw the human create a born in time.
Thank you. So this is the first step, is that she's shown a dream, a vision of the cosmic past. What has happened in the universe up to now. And she's even shown the seed, the hidden secret seed from which everything has emerged, the mystic origins, the shadowy beginnings of world fate. How did it all start? It's as if this is a lamp has been lifted up. He says it's a lamp of symbol. So in the form of symbols, this hidden truth is lighted up for her in images, imaging to her the world's significance, not only where it all came from, but why. What is the meaning of it all? She is shown how in the indeterminate formlessness of self, creation took its first mysterious steps. Before there were any forms or any kind of exteriorization or projection of the One, there was this indeterminate formlessness in which infinite potentiality was there, infinite possibility, but nothing has been formed or shaped. This is all happening within the being of the One Self, the Brahman, the One. That's where creation took its first mysterious steps. And that process of creation made bodies with shapes, with forms, which were housing soul. And that is the the movement towards the fulfillment of this whole process when matter learns to think and individual personalities develop. And she sees the whole of space peopled with the seeds of life, and she sees the human creature born in time. So it's as if she's given an overview of the whole process from the first formation to the stage where we are now. Anything to ask?
Yes. Up above, I don't think, anyway, on the second line there is the crypt seed and so on. The crypt seed means that which is going to be created but will eventually die, considering what a crypt is.
No. This word crypt, when Sri Aurobindo uses it like this as an adjective, it means something that's hidden, that's secret. You are thinking of a crypt in a cathedral, in a Western cathedral, or any cathedral anywhere in the world. If there's a crypt, it means the place deep down in the foundations where the relics of on which that sacred building is erected are hidden. So it's a quiet, sacred space at the very basis. But it's also the origin of the word cryptic, which means mysterious and puzzling and difficult to... But here I think it is this, what is that seed which is hidden at the very, very beginning of things, that secret seed.
And why all of possibility not emerged?
Why it hasn't emerged?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, this is now our way of thinking about it. Sri Aurobindo tells us that it's nonsensical to think about a beginning of this process. But for us, since we're here in time, we can't help thinking of our universe, this manifestation that we live in, as somehow having started at a certain point in time. So he, in that way, we can think about a state, let us call it a state rather than a time, a state of being, in which nothing is manifested, in which all the possibilities of world, of universe, of manifestation are held within the soul of the One, the transcendent beyond all manifestation. And from there, it has been exteriorized, projected. So she's shown that state, that indeterminate formlessness of self. It's just a state of consciousness in which all the possibilities are held there. That's where creation took its first mysterious steps. That's where first the ideas of things got shaped, and then they're projected in time and space and individuality. So it's as if she's being shown this whole process. Yes, Mihong. Yes. Well, we don't know. I mean, these are old scriptures. We don't know what the people who formulated these stories, these images, what they meant by them. We only know how they've been interpreted over the centuries since. But I just found it recently again when Sri Aurobindo, when he's talking about the secret of the Veda in his book there. He says that he believes that the Vedas are the last, the earliest scriptures that we have that are still available to humanity. And even they speak about an earlier time when there were the old fathers who knew more. No? And the Vedas are expressed, according to Sri Aurobindo's insight based on his experience, they are written in symbolic language. And he says that he thinks this way of seeing and understanding things was once a worldwide culture, a global culture, and that we can look back into the early writings of other peoples and think that they too are written in this symbolic language, which has an outer meaning which can be understood on the surface, but much more importantly, it has a deep inner psychological meaning. So if we apply, and perhaps some people have done that, these 7 days of Genesis, of the creation up to the human level, we can think that this describes an evolutionary process. You know, that first there was this, he separated matter from earth, from sky, no? Or first he said, let there be light, no? Is that the very first thing? And then there's the creation of the mineral world, and then the plants and the animals. And last, there's the... So it could be understood like that, and we could think that perhaps those... The origin, what has come to us in this rather cute, crude form, which some people still insist on taking literally, might have another deeper inner meaning. Certainly that's how Sri Aurobindo expresses it. Yes?
Sri Aurobindo believes in evolution.
Yeah.
And he says that in the secret of Veda, the forefathers knew more than what the Vedic people knew. That means the knowledge is going that way.
Well, you can think like that. If we really go into it, nothing, as he said, is lost. No, it comes back again in another form, in another expression. I know there's this idea that as knowledge gets passed down from guru to guru, always something gets lost, and so the knowledge gets diminished. But in fact, we see that there is evolution in the knowledge. I'm not going to go into it in detail now, all the different stages, but...
Truth is progressive.
Truth is expressing itself progressively, and it's by the evolutionary process, it's producing more and more individualized beings who are capable of receiving and accessing it. Yes. In those days, perhaps it was only a handful of people, and we can even trace the steps of this increasing, or we can say, democratization of knowledge. Yes. Here we are, just ordinary people blessed with some kind of access to these high secrets.
And look how 200 years ago, all the technique, everything we don't have, so the spirit expresses always in new form. So the essence isn't the same, but it always gives a new details and knowledge.
New forms, yeah.
New forms.
Yeah, we have to remember that for some people, the Holy Book, the Bible, for the Christian, the Quran, and I guess maybe there are others, for the so-called fundamentalists, this is the inerrant word of God, and therefore nothing has changed from the description of the beginning, and therefore there is no...
But it's a question of our mental interpretations of the word of God. No. We can agree with them. We can say, yes, this is revelation, this is the word of God. It's just that I'm... hearing, receiving the word of God in a different way from what you are, and let us not quarrel about it. God will accept all our faith and all our worship and Amitoj.
What is the rule of atavism, which even mother said, like?
What is the rule
atavism,
of atavism?
So even mother says, like, in the evolutionary process also, it always comes.
Atavism is that we are carrying the load of the past with us. In what we read this morning, it says that. No, nothing is wholly dead. It's all still there. So this is one of the forces which is conditioning our lives and which our soul, as it emerges and grows and in strength, has to deal with more and more. Atavism, the tendency to go back to forms that were dominant at another, an earlier time.
Is that an obstruction or hurdle in evolution, or does it?
It seems, shall we call it a challenge? Something that has to be dealt with. Now we see that in the world today. As we were reading, I thought, yes, it's a very good description of what is happening. No? So, but I feel, if I can share this, that its significance, that Sri Aurobindo gives us this section here, that this is when Savitri first looks inside herself and tries to find her soul. The first thing is this awareness of the cosmic past that is given to her and shown to her. And I think, if I've understood correctly from the mother, she said that's one of the first things when we begin to come in touch with the psychic being, we may get a memory of the whole past or a vision or a dream like this. And here it's important for Savitri to have this understanding before she goes on the next steps in her search for her soul. And for us, it's really, I think, here it's as if Sri Aurobindo's view of evolution has been expressed in a very compressed form for us in this second half, these 10 pages here.
So also to have compassion, understanding for the inner process is also for compassion, understanding for the other person's process, isn't it?
So as often happens when Sri Aurobindo's embarking on a particular topic, at the beginning he gives a summary. So first summary we just got, what was the content of this dream? She saw in the indeterminate formlessness of self, creation taking its first steps. And there are bodies with shapes, with forms, but they are housing soul. No? And because of this, there's an ongoing evolutionary process by which matter can learn to think. And individual, personal expressions of soul can emerge. And she sees that evolutionary process of the space of the material universe being peopled with the seeds of life everywhere in the universe, and in some places they can sprout. No? And at least one little planet somewhere, the human creature has been born in time. No? And then he gives the summary again, in a little more fullness, in up to the end of this paragraph, which ends at line 152. So we could have a look at this, look forward. Where are we, Bridget? Yes.
At first appears the dim half-neutral tide of being emerging out of infinite knowledge. A consciousness looked at the inconscient vast, and pleasure and pain stirred in the insensible void. All was the deed of a blind world energy. Unconscious of her own exploits, she worked, shaping the universe out of the unknown. In fragmentary beams, she grew aware, a chaos of little sensibilities gathered around a small eagle's pinpoint head. In it, a sentient creature found its voice. It moved and lived, a breathing, thinking whole.
Thank you. So this is the way that she sees the process. At first, appeared a dim, half-neutral tide, something also formless, an ocean, a tide. It's dim. I don't know how something can be half-neutral. Anyway, somehow it's Yes, it is consciousness, no? First of all, it's being, existence of being that emerged out of infinite nothingness. This is the beginning of the creation, first existence. No? But along with that existence, there's a consciousness that can observe all that inconscient vastness. And in that void, that emptiness, that nothingness, which has no senses, which cannot feel, pleasure and pain begin to stir. So there's the possibility of ananda, of delight, of feeling there, in that emptiness. And everything that's done is done by this blind world energy. It that can't see, that isn't conscious. No? But that's the energy which is driving now the whole process. She's not conscious of what she's doing, but there she is. That energy is at work. She's shaping a universe out of the inane, the shapelessness, the meaninglessness.
What is the sequence? The matter first, and thinking, then the being, and then the consciousness?
No, we have to think that he's giving different levels of explanation. First, he gives a summary explanation from lines 118 to line 123. In the indeterminate formlessness of self, no, down to the human creature born in time. That's a kind of overview of the whole process. Then he goes back to the beginning. He goes back to that indeterminate formlessness. And on the you can say on the level of exteriorization, the first thing that Savitri sees emerging is this dim tide of something existing in the nothingness. No? And that has consciousness and the capacity of feeling. No? And then Sri Aurobindo tells us that all this is emerging because of the action of this energy, world energy, which is the counterpart of consciousness. There's not only awareness, there's action. But this energy is unconscious. It's the energy that the physicists perhaps have discovered. So that energy is what is shaping a universe out of this, whatever it was, this soulless emptiness that was there before the universe began to emerge, before the Big Bang, if we believe the But that world energy, with the process of evolution, the next step happens. There are fragmentary beings, tiny little beings. And as the eons roll on, that world energy, who was completely blind and unconscious, begins to become more conscious. She begins to get to grow aware in those tiny little amoebas or bacteria or whatever was there at the beginning. And gradually in these living beings, they have the capacity of some kind of sense impression. It's disorganized, it's a chaos of small, small sense impressions. But they gather around a sense of identity. Small egos, pinpoint head, tiny little sense. Those tiny beings can distinguish themselves from the other little beings, and they can even recognize particular ones of their fellows. No? So there's some kind of sense of identity is growing. Here he's speaking from the outer point of view, from the nature point of view. Within all this, the soul is also there. So out of this, we have the emergence of a sentient creature, a creature that can feel. And it becomes animal. It can move. And it can live, a breathing, thinking whole. So that's another way of overseeing, giving a summary of the whole process. Now he's going to do it from the point of view of consciousness next. Yes, Andres.
Is he referring to the force of prakriti?
The force of
prakriti,
when he says a blind world energy, we can say this. We might put the label prakriti. Yes. We might say shakti, but shakti implies more consciousness. No, yes. When we use the term prakriti, we think of something mechanical. It's working without being aware of its workings. We go a step further, Sudhanya.
On a being portion of subconscious life, the formless surface consciousness level, the stream of thoughts and feelings in and going, a form of memories hurrying and disdain, the bright crust of habitual sense and thought, the seed of living personality and recurring habits in its permanence. Mind lessons level out a mutable form. He built a mobile house on shifting sands. A floating resilient
floating isle.
A floating isle upon a bottomless sea. The conscious being was by this level made. It looked around it on its pitiful field. In the green polar pool and various earth, it hoped in a deep body to survive, relying on matter's false eternity. It felt a godhead in its desired house. It saw green home, green immortal.
So this is a third summary, starting from that. Anyway, read it to yourselves. I shouldn't rush on. So there's that formless ocean, dim ocean of subconscious life. Life in itself is a waking up to a beginning of consciousness. But it's a kind of subconscious life that expresses its awareness through action, not through knowledge. So on in that ocean of dim subconscious life, something wakes up, a surface consciousness that's no longer subconscious, that becomes what we would call conscious. It's not individualized. There's this stream of thoughts and feelings. But on the surface of that surface, there's foam, a foam of memories. Memories of thoughts and feelings and experiences, sensations. And if this becomes dense enough, firm enough, it forms a crust of habitual sense, feelings, and even thought. So this can be the base of an individualized living personality. The beginning, the very, very beginning of it in the animal level. And habits form. They repeat again and again. And this gives the appearance, the mimics, permanence, that things will always be like this. They have always been like this and they will always be like this. Some kind of firm base. Out of this, mind is born. Mind, nascent. And mind starts to work. What does mind do? Mind defines things, separates things out of this stream of consciousness and sensation, and it puts labels, this, that. So this emerging form of consciousness called mind, this was able in individual forms to build a mobile house on shifting sands. That house doesn't have a firm foundation, but there might be a mental form which can move around, maybe also changes its shape. It's like a floating island on a bottomless sea, an island of consciousness. So in this way, by this blind world energy, a conscious being was made, was formed. And if there's one conscious being, there can be many more, more or less conscious. So this conscious being looks around it. This world, this difficult, challenging field, in this green, wonderful and perilous earth, we are attracted and we are terrified. No? So what does this consciousness want? It hopes to survive. It doesn't want to get dissolved. It hopes to survive. And it wants to survive on the base of matter, which gives to it the appearance of something eternal and reliable. But then there's a new stage when that little consciousness feels within it, in its fragile house, in this breakable body, it begins to feel a divine presence. And then it looks up, it sees higher states of consciousness, and it begins to dream of immortality. This is a characterization of the human creature who's been born in time. So then he's going to tell us in more detail. We had these three summaries. There will be a more complete summary over the next nine pages. All this is described in much more detail in King Asvapati's experiences in book 2. So that's why I can say something about it to you now, because we've been through all that in more detail. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll stop there for today. We can hear Mother reading some passages from earlier on. There are no, she didn't read any of the rest of this canto.
But Satya one sometimes half understood. Young from the beach of her deep passionate want. Yet ever they go into each other more, until it seemed no power could rend apart. Since even the body's walls could not divide. So when he wandered into the forest, oft her conscious spirit walked with him and knew his actions as if in herself he moved. He less aware, thrilled with her from afar. Above her brows, where will and knowledge meet, a mighty voice invading mortal space. As the voice touched her body became stark and a rigid golden statue of motionless stone. A stone of God lit by an amethyst soul. Her heart listened to its slow vision beats. Why comest thou to this dumb, death-bound earth, O spirit? O immortal energy, if it was to nurse grief in a helpless heart, or with hard, tearless eyes awake thy doom. Arise, O soul, and vanquish time and death. But Savitri's heart replied in the dim night, why should I strive with earth's unyielding laws? Stave off death's inevitable hour. This surely is best, to pactize with my fate and follow close behind my lover's steps and pass through night from twilight to the sun, across the tenebrous river that divides the adjoining parishes of earth and heaven. The voice replied, is this enough, O spirit? And what shall thy soul say when it wakes then knows the work was left undone for which it came. Then Savitri's heart fell mute. It spoke no word. A power within her answered the still voice. I am thy portion here, charged with thy work. As thou myself seated forever above, speak to my depths, O great and deathless voice. Command, for I am here to do thy will. The voice replied, remember why thou camest. Find out thy soul. Recover thy hid self. In the enormous emptiness of thy mind, thou shalt see the Eternal's body in the world. Know him in every voice heard by thy soul. Then shalt thou harbor my force and conquer death. Then, Savitri, my undoomed husband said, still rigid in her golden motionless pose, a statue of the fire of the inner sun. She looked into herself and sought for herself.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.